listening to the Portland Afoot podcast. This is our pilot episode. We're going to try to expand the Portland Afoot 10-minute news magazine format into a podcast on a monthly basis, just kind of giving you a different way to hear your transit-related news. I'm Lillian, and this is Michael, your editor.
Hi. I am excited to try this out with Lillian, who is, I think, different from me and similar to me in key ways. I think that Lillian is, like me, inclined to have crazy ideas, and unlike me, I think she actually follows through with more of her crazy ideas. And conversely, I think that I build my crazy ideas when I actually, on like occasions when I do follow through, into like regimented structures and repetitions. And I think Lily pulls the plug on them when she doesn't enjoy them. And Lillian will correct me if I'm wrong, but hopefully I think this will work out well because we will complement each other in that way. We'll find out.
So we're going to cover just a couple things every month, a couple news stories, some of which you're probably going to read in the Portland Afoot magazine if you subscribe, and a couple of which you probably won't read in the news magazine.
If you don't subscribe, I think it's just fine. this is intended for people probably more who don't subscribe and want to get it some other way.
And we'll try to keep it short so you can listen to it when you're on the bus or the MAX. Hope you enjoy listening. I ran down the hill trying to catch the bus. Now I'm hoping to myself everything is cool. Standing on my block like a fool. For a while I'm alone until the bus is gone. 3 or 5 minutes with us, we can now be home. Can somebody come real fast to my rescue? I'm stuck at the crib and I don't know what to do. We're going to give you 4 news items today. One of the news items is the OPB did a standoff bike bus car race.
Yes, this was their Ecotrope blog that is specialized on ecological issues, and they're trying to get our attention by doing this awesome contest, I think, actually. But it's happened elsewhere in the world.
Yeah, it actually happens on a pretty regular basis in a bunch of cities. So LA, New York, and San Francisco have all had them. Baltimore also did one this year. What's interesting is that the winner of these contests kind of varies by town, but transit has been the loser across the board in every single city, no matter where they transit. So Time's Up in New York always does a race every year that's transit.
I didn't know this.
Bike and car. And the bike always wins. It's won every year, which is clearly Time's Up's goal. They vary the route each year, but usually it does kind of cross boroughs and goes into or out of Manhattan. And the bus has just lost miserably every year. There was one year where the bus did slightly better, still lost, but had a much better time because it was a subway-only trip, the route they chose that year. Usually they choose, like, a route which involves having to transfer buses, and then they just are miserable.
Which I think is the... We can talk about this in a sec, but I think that's the thing that the contest teaches us about traveling, about commuting. But we can go into more results first. So the results were that Team Bike arrived in 18 minutes, Team Car in 38, and Team Transit in 60 minutes.
It's important to note that the Team Car
stopped for gas,
which took them 13 minutes.
So I talked to the Cassandra, the Ecotrope maestro, about it. Maestra? She said that the driver of the car, Christian Fodenwenzel, was so certain that he would win that he decided he had to make it fair by stopping for gas, and was completely confounded when he discovered that he was 20 minutes later. The reason he stopped for gas, and if he had not stopped for gas, he would have still been 7 minutes later than the bike. So even with that, the bike was faster. Cassandra also mentioned that she was shocked by the number of people who cared deeply about this and came in with questions like, well, did you track the number of seconds it took to walk from the door of the building to the car in the parking lot, whereas the bike is often parked right next to the door and you can start right there? And she said that if you wanted to, you could definitely pick this race apart. So were you surprised, Lily?
No, I wasn't surprised. I think that if we had gone the opposite direction, so they went from OHSU on top of the hill to Amnesia Brewery, which is on top of another hill, but admittedly a much smaller one. And I think if they had gone the other way, we might have found the car might have won.
That's interesting.
Maybe or just had lost by much less of a margin, because you do have to like hike up the OHSU hill. If you're combining with transit, you can take the tram, but then you have to wait for the tram. So
right, and this was purist; they weren't allowed to combine. So I want to make my point about transit in this case. So the reason that transit took so long, obviously, was that they had to wait for a transfer, and the OPB folks chose Amnesia because producer Allison Frost really likes to go to Amnesia. And they chose OHSU because they wanted someplace with multiple transit options that none of them worked at, so they wouldn't know the place very well. It's also the biggest employer in the city. So the catch with this is that when you're taking two random locations, obviously the car or bus or the car or bike is going to be better, whereas the bus is most efficient when you're sort of building things around it. And that's the whole, like, philosophy of Portland and light rail and frequent service bus routes, is that we're building a city where there's an extremely high probability that you won't have to transfer. And the rail is there, the streetcar is there, all of these things are there in order to induce development along these lines so that there's going to be less chance of transfer. And picking two random locations, though it sort of approximates everybody's life in the short term, doesn't really approximate, hopefully, how a city develops in the long term, which is the places you need to get to are sort of one shot away.
But what I find curious about that is New York City, though, right? Because you think of a city that is just developed everywhere,
right?
It has an incredibly developed transit network as well as an incredibly developed city. Mm-hmm. And yet, you can't beat New York City's transit in this country.
You're right.
Like, transit is still losing in New York City. Every time I go to New York City, I'm amazed. I end up taking transit more than I bike there. And I'm typically more of a biker. But I take transit because it's easy. Like, I just, like, walk down the stairs and there's the subway.
That's interesting.
Everywhere. But it's still slower. But it's often a better experience, you know?
So that brings us to my other argument, which is that there are more important things in life than speed. Let's talk about germ story.
Okay.
So the Oregonian came up with a very interesting story, I thought, of that they convinced a PSU team to go on a bunch of buses and MAX trains and bus stops and take samples of the bacteria there. And so they took like two square inch patches of seats and chairs and the floor and the straps and looked at the density of bacteria colonies. And what they found, among other things, was that the cloth seats of the bus are as dirty as the floor of the bus, which I thought was startling. And that the cloth seats are 40 times more germy than the vinyl seats you will find on the MAX.
Which actually is comparable. They did a study in the BART in San Francisco back in March, which pretty much confirmed the same thing against the Muni, which, if you're familiar with San Francisco, they have three different transit systems that don't talk to each other. And the Muni has hard vinyl seats, and the BART has these cloth seats that are just kind of disgusting to look at, let alone... The BART also has carpet.
That's true.
Inside of the trains. And
I forgot about that.
They went and swiped them down and found similar things. San Francisco is also, BART is actually prioritizing changing out to vinyl seats, which is what TriMet is doing. Mm-hmm. TriMet says all of their new fleets, they've made a commitment to have them have vinyl seats instead of these carpet seats because it's easier to see spills on them. They clearly have less germs based on this study. The issue with San Francisco is that the BART is far less likely to change out their seats than we are likely to change out our bus fleet in Portland. So.
Good point.
Just because rolling train stock is not something you turn over very quickly.
That's true. So wash your hands before you eat after you've been crawling around on the bus. That's the rule, right?
Kind of one of the interesting parts of this story was that TriMet has, in all of their budget cuts, they've eliminated their 8 full-time staff that used to go around and give a very deep cleaning every 45 days to each of the buses. So that meant every 45 days they were getting each bus was getting a 3-hour cleaning where all of the handholds were getting cleaned and all of the seats.
It's like all 600 buses.
Yeah.
It's a lot of buses.
And they eliminated those staff. So now each bus is getting a deep clean once a year. And they'll go around and they pick up trash and like mop the floors at the end of the shift. But the main way they like clean them now is kind of hilarious.
They have a machine that has it's like a giant vacuum, and it attaches to the door, like the front door, I think, of the bus. And then they turn it on, and it tries to suck everything out the front door of the bus into this giant vacuum.
They call it the Cyclone?
The Cyclone, yes. I think it's a brand name. The robots are taking over the world, and they're going to replace us this way.
Yeah.
And we're all going to be dirtier as a result.
So they just, like, pump 30-mile-per-hour winds into the bus in the hope that it makes things cleaner, which I find pretty hilarious.
Yeah.
So, talking with some bus drivers, a lot of them say that they go around and clean their buses now because there isn't a staff, so they get there early for their shift, and they'll go, like, wipe down the handholds and stuff. So,
yeah.
I don't know if making our operators work harder is really the way to do it.
Yeah.
The
upside of transit?
Yeah. So, flipping from the germy dirtiness of TriMet over to why we love TriMet.
This is also... I like this essay because it's also why I love transit. It's by Gordon Price, who is a smart dude from Vancouver, BC, who often comes down to Portland, and he is... What's interesting about Price is that he's like, his argument for transit is sort of basically aesthetic. Like, his argument for cities and urbanism is that, no, like, big cities are just nicer than the suburbs. The suburbs are ugly and cities are nice. And so if you disagree with him, then, you know, he's not going to persuade you. But it's an interesting, like, core of his argument. And that's what he's making here. He says... This was my favorite line from it. He's talking about why he likes riding transit, and he says that it's because he gets to spend time with his smartphone, or his book, or his tablet, or his media player. He says, my travel time is far too valuable to waste actually driving. Talk about distracting. That's brilliant, because, yes, that is exactly how I feel. If I can extend my travel time by 50%, but increase my productivity while traveling by 100%, then I would much rather do the latter. And that's how I use transit. What about you, Lily?
Oh, I'm all about the biking. I'd rather... I feel like I couldn't drive places because it frustrates me in terms of... I hate being in traffic, and that is really distracting. But I definitely like biking because it's kind of a mind vacation. And then I don't have to feel guilty about not doing anything. See, if you're on transit, you have to feel guilty because you're, like, sitting somewhere for 30 minutes and you're not doing work. But
there's nothing more luxurious.
But if you're biking, then you can't be doing work. So, you know,
exactly.
It's 30 minutes a day.
Drives me crazy.
I have a 2-hour bike commute every day. So, you know, that's 2 hours that I like,
that's
can't
2 hours.
Feel guilty
that's
about.
That's total 2 hours.
Total trip. 2 hours, okay. Yeah, round trip. So, but on transit, it'd be an hour and a half each way. So that would be an hour and a half, 3 hours of quality time a day spent with my books, I guess. But
that's right. That's all I have to say about that.
I think it's an interesting perspective. Gordon Price is a really interesting guy. If you ever get the chance, take the Portland Traffic and Transportation class. It's this great class offered for free by the city for citizen activists at PSU every fall. They're probably about to be taking applications for it coming up in August. And Gordon Price always kind of does the end lecture for that class, and he's just a fantastic guy to listen to.
pdx.be/transpoclass is the place you need to go to find information about it.
I think we'll put that link on the internet somewhere. That's not an
Deal.
Easy thing to remember. So moving from why I love transit, let's talk about why I love trains that don't go just within my city. So there's this great piece. Where is this from?
This is from the Wall Street Journal, and it's a very Wall Street Journal-ish piece, so you have to bear with that. But it's by a guy named David Netto, who apparently is a like semi-famous interior designer, and he's got big chunky glasses and like a super cute daughter in this picture. But you have to love him anyway, because he has this wonderful argument in favor of taking trains on long-distance travel, which I thought was really interesting. Our last issue was about traveling mostly by plane, but I think that he makes this great case that you should spend maybe a couple hundred dollars more. If you're traveling with a family, it's really pretty comparable to between taking a sleeper car on a train and going through the whole airport rigmarole and riding there. And he's got some great tips for this sort of scenario. Lily, you've said you've done some long-distance travel?
I've crossed the country by train, I think I'm going on 6 times now. And I've also taken it down the coast and on a bunch of, like, shorter, which in train terms is, like, 12 to 18-hour trips. So he had some interesting kind of thoughts here. And one of his main ones was spring for a sleeper car, which was essentially, like, there's no point in doing this on the cheap because you're going to be doing it for 36 to 48 hours, so you might as well be doing it luxuriously. I never spring for a sleeper car because I spend almost all my time in the lounge car anyway, or the dining car, or the video game car, and I end up, and the seats are not uncomfortable. These are not airplane seats. If you've never been in a long distance train, it's completely different than your experience of like being crammed up and like two inches from the person next to you. There's 2 seats per row on the Cross Country Empire Builder, which is one that goes from Portland to Chicago with connections to DC, New York, Boston. On that train, I'm tiny, but I could put 2 of me in the space in between like my headrest and the place where the table is. I actually can't even reach the table in front of me when it's down. Like there, it really is that spread out. And I can like lay almost flat down on just the coach seats on train travel. So I'm a big fan of just, you know, pack a bottle of wine, go make some friends in the lounge car. You know, the lounge car is the most beautiful place that you're going to be anyway, and you can make noise and talk and have fun in there without feeling like you're disturbing people that are sleeping.
I think that's totally true. I think that Neto's case is mostly for if you have a family and you want to travel and spend a lot of time with your family who you don't get to see or, you know, during your intense interior designer day job. I priced it. The trip from Portland to Los Angeles is $1,000 if you have a family bedroom for 2 adults and 2 children, and that is just almost exactly the same as for economy class plane tickets from Portland to Los Angeles. So it's really a question of time and comfort. And I think he makes a great case that if you're on the train, the vacation starts immediately instead of having this, you know, but the beginning and last day of every vacation.
Right. Well, and I also have a recommendation. If you do travel, you know, once or twice a year, consider getting like the Amtrak credit card, because I got that and I barely have to ever pay for a train trip anymore. I don't spend a lot of money on my credit card, but those points go a long way when you're buying train trips as opposed to plane trips on them, because a small amount of points adds up a lot more, especially like from Portland, the trip to Seattle or Eugene, which is a much more pleasant experience on a train than it ever will be in a car or on a plane, is almost, you know, it's like 1,000 points. So
that's basically a 5% return cash back if you're going to use it. So each month we're probably going to read what I think is probably my favorite, certainly most people's favorite part of the print edition, which is the Only on the Bus story. And this one from the most recent, the travel issue, is by a guy named Scott. He was riding the 75. He rides the 75 almost every day. And he has actually written a novel set entirely on the 75. And the August issue of Portland Afoot is going to be, it's going to feature an interview with him. It's great. He's a very interesting dude. Anyway, this is his little story. And it's true. 8 of us were still ramming it north on the majestic northbound 75 Milwaukee to St. John's this morning. Most everyone had been dumped out at Hollywood Transit Center or Killingsworth, leaving 4 of us rush hour regulars in our comfortable, semi-comfortable, befogged prep zone pre-work. The other 4 people I did not recognize. There is a 4-to-6-plex on the east side of Northeast 42nd near North Columbia that is one of the worst bits of housing in the city. Very, very small, shotgun style, plywood over windows, swampy front yard, wind blasted, warped front walls, plastic for windows. Don't see how they pass any kind of code. Anyway, we were blasting towards this plex, and the regulars know the apartments are coming because you can see the people's heads turning to check them out. I mean, it's human nature to examine anything relatively out of the ordinary. The trick is not bringing judgment or voyeurism to the table. Still, it is not easy to be unemotional, non-political, unconcerned when you see this plex. That said, we get there, and for the first time all winter, I saw someone standing in the doorway of one of the plexes. It was a woman of middle age in her bathrobe, with a cup of coffee, looking at all the geese and gulls overhead. This part of town is a major flyway, and really a dramatically beautiful area. Out of pure chance, she looked down as I was looking at her, and we had direct eye contact. I pointed to the sky and smiled, and she smiled and flapped her wings. That's all.
That was a good one. That's my favorite part of Portland Afoot every month. So in addition to that, I thought I would read you some cute recent hashtag TriMet tweets from the Twitter stream. If you ever, you know, find yourself wanting to procrastinate for any reason, I highly recommend just typing into hashtag TriMet into Twitter, because it gives me some good ones. Here's a golden one from Lady Marika. Girl next to me on the bus farts, complains about the smell to all within earshot, whips out perfume, and douses herself and me. Ugh. Hashtag TriMet. From C. Godreau, good old number 70. I can always count on the third bus on the schedule to actually be there on time. Hashtag TriMet. And another one from C. Godreau. Older man is standing at Park Rose Max stop wearing what appears to be a woman's one-piece bathing suit with a pair of jeans. Hashtag TriMet.
Nice.
Those are our three hashtag TriMet tweets for this week. So that's actually everything we have for you this week. So you've been listening to the Portland Afoot podcast. Is there anything you want to add, Michael?
No, I'm excited to see where this goes. I have no idea where it's going to go. Send us advice.
So if you want to follow Portland Afoot on the internets, you can find them on Twitter at Portland Afoot.
Facebook.com/PortlandAfoot and just PortlandAfoot.org.
PortlandAfoot.org is a fabulous wiki full of lots of information on low-car lifestyle in Portland. So check it out. It has lots of good information on there. And we will see you at some point next month. We do not know yet when. So you've been listening to the August edition of Portland Afoot, and I'm Lillian Kerbake.
And I'm Michael Anderson.
Chill till the time came around, and I did.
He did.
But a little too long, cause when I woke up, yo, the bus was gone. I almost broke my neck trying to get out the door, and I chased the bus till my feet were sore on the tram. But I couldn't catch up. I guess it must have been my day for me to have bad luck. Cause I went for lunch money, book bag busted, scuffed up my sneakers, now I'm really disgusted. And when I got to school, it was the same old thing. Stepped in the class and the school bell rang. It was nothing I could do. I tried to explain, but the teacher treated me like I was playing a game.
You lose, you lose.
I never miss my bus again.